The Grade Cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a grade cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the grade cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible, at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks, champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Grade Cricketer podcast. Excuse that slow start. I'm just laughing at things that these guys are saying off air. My name is Ian Higgins and I'm joined by Sam Perry and Dave Edwards to talk about everything that's happening in the world of cricket this week. And the fact that we don't have a guest on at all suggests quite suggestive of the state of play in cricket in general, because there's no cricket happening. The football season in Australia is well underway, and so cricket's on the back of our minds. But lads, welcome to the show, and I reckon this is actually going to be a really good one, because I've been looking at the hashtag AskTGCs, which is, you know, as I keep saying, my favourite time of the week, and there's some belting questions on there, so that's basically how we're promoting the show.
Yeah, g'day, Higos. Thanks for that welcome. We'll see how we go today. In many ways, we find talking about actual cricket and news to be really constricting. You know, hopefully with the vacuum of nothingness, we can create something. I mean, we certainly couldn't create a guest this week, despite multiple messages to multiple people. You know who you are. Actually, you probably don't, because you have no idea who we are. But messages were seen. Put it that way. Messages were seen.
They were definitely seen. There were two ticks all over the place. I reckon it's going to be loose. Yeah. Lads, I reckon let's just embrace this. We've got a license, don't we? We've got a real license here to just say whatever we want to. Not that we don't always have that, because we say whatever we want, freedom of speech.
What do you guys reckon is worse? Like on WhatsApp, the two blue ticks like suggest the word seen, but then on Twitter, when you go on someone's DMs, then like you hold your finger over the message, and then the word seen comes up. You know, it's like same on Instagram Messenger when you slide into, you know, an Instagram model's DMs saying, "Hey, are you still with that boyfriend?" And then it just says seen. Like, what's worse?
It's all pretty bad, he goes. In fact, I actually wouldn't mind some clarification from you on a recent tweet of yours with your fledgling Twitter presence. There's a wonderful picture of you looking like you're outside some sort of wedding and you're looking down and playing with your cufflink of some description. You look a real picture. You look like you've been doing split set weights and exercise, I don't know, whatever they call those things these days. And there's some message in there about, you're trolling through my media now you can see who you hate or something. Is that... Can you expand on that, on my loose description of that?
So I posted a photo of myself at a wedding that I've just come home from. Actually, I got one comment back straight away saying, "Those shoes are fucking village." So, ironically, the...
Fuck, mate. You're trying to cement, like, a personal Twitter presence, and everyone just keeps pulling those fucking grey cricketer quotes back at you. You just can't escape it. You're trying to get somewhere with that Twitter presence, but TGC written all over everything. Forever.
Yeah, the funny is, like, I'll never escape. Well, the only people who follow me on Twitter are the people, you know, who listen to this podcast and, you know, follow the Grade Cricketer and stuff. So, like, it's the exact same audience I'm speaking to, just from a different account.
Exactly. Yeah, because you're trying to branch into. You're trying to show that you have ideas
range,
and you're not a one dimensional character outside. You know, you have range exactly outside of cricket. You know, you put things up about, you know, gun laws in the US and stuff like that, and someone will just write into them, you know, write back saying, "Well, you've got to get them somehow."
Hey, are you guys offering me?
I don't know anymore. Someone asked me at work the other day if I was being sincere, and I said I don't know anymore. I honestly don't know if I'm being sincere about anything.
Basically, every hashtag AskTGC so that we get written in, I mean, every second one is, the question is, am I being alpha? And I think that we could almost rename the segment, am I being alpha? Unless you guys want to change it to, is he goes okay? Which I know is another big question of yours that you guys like to answer. But someone who's not okay is Kagiso Rabada. How was that segue? Was it there? Can we go with it? I've said it now, so we're going to do it. He's been suspended for a couple of games, lads. We're not going to get to see him bowl again in the series. And that's good news for the Australian cricket team. I suppose. Well, no, it is, because he's the best bowler in the world. Like, the irony of him getting that two-match suspension and then the ICC, like, by the way, you know he's the best bowler in the world. But there's been so much surrounding this week. I mean, that's sort of the news of the week from this series, isn't it? We'll go into every avenue possible. Like, obviously, the Philander situation, his tweet. But Rabada suspended for two games. Where are we at with it?
What's curious about it, he goes, is that, like, I think in any other situation, Australians would be, like, you know, in raptures about, an opposition bowler being suspended. Like, and I'm talking about the public. And it would tend to be a very binary thing, because all things are binary, but where people are like, well, you can't do that, and blah, blah, blah. But it seems to me like most, like, even, I'm talking about, like, you know, Fox Sports comments section. Hello, Fox Sports. Do we still have a relationship? Maybe.
I don't think so.
Comment section saying, oh, he's one of the best young bowlers. We'd love to see him play. And it's really strange to me in the sense that people are like, oh, what, we want the opposition to be better than they are? That's a really, it's very un-Australian thing. But, like, I think such is, like, Rabada's popularity. He's just this, like, young, fast bowler who doesn't seem to have, like, very, like, extreme facial expressions or anything when he, like, gets angry at Australians. We just like his wide, popping eyes and the way he gets people out. That's the one that stuck out to me. And I'd like to see him play as well.
It's disappointing that he's going to be gone, though. I mean, it's kind of like when you're watching Australia versus New Zealand or in some kind of sport, and you kind of want the Kiwis to go well, but not too well. And then they start getting a few runs or a few tries, and they're ahead, and they're going to win. And suddenly, you're like, fuck, they're going to win. I really think that kind of is similar in this instance. Like, we want South Africa to do well, but now they're doing too well, so we fucking rub him out. Oh, but now we actually want him back in because it's not competitive anymore. We can't have everything. We just can't have everything.
Yeah, we'll try, though. We will definitely try. The funny part about this, and I think we mentioned this last week and others have as well, is Steve Smith's comments before the series saying, well, you know, he was aware that Rabada was close to being suspended. And then there's this kind of like, there's this idea that perhaps Smith took a dive. I know he goes, we'll talk about that shortly, but I'm very much enjoying the idea that there are cricketers now who can take dives in the same way that, like, football or soccer players can sort of go, well, we've got him on a yellow, let's see if we can get him a red. Yeah, like, just doing that in cricket is a very strange, incongruous thing.
That's one thing that, like, we would never be able to, like there is no equivalent to that. Like, you never know an opposition player. You wouldn't know that he's, you know, at the judiciary, you know, week in, week out necessarily. Like, you'd never be aware that he's, like, you know, one, you know, incident away. So, like, but it's just like the tactics of that at an international professional level is just like, it's so deceiving and, like,
dark,
it's
dark arts, isn't it? It's not just what's happening on the
arts,
field.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
It's very un-cricket as well, though, because there's a backhanded compliment in it, isn't there? If they go, oh, we're going to try and get Rabada suspended. I mean, in many other ways, it's like saying, well, we don't want to face him. We don't want to play against him because he is good.
It's a cricket equivalent of how, you know, players just trying to kick, like Messi, for instance. They just try and kick him. Do you guys find that, like, that because of the way Australia has behaved specifically in this series and it's kind of blown up and whatever... All the people who hate the Australian cricket team, who probably have a loose interest in the sport anyway, but, I mean, even the people who are sort of sitting on the fence about it, there's something very uncomfortable about the way Australia's going about this series and how it's all going down, that them actually kind of... You don't really want to see Australia do that well. You know, like I'll watch the next test matches, next two test matches, and I'll hope Australia wins because it's just, like, it's instinctive. And, you know, same thing in the Ashes, just gone. Like, I was really hoping for a tight series, but, you know, in my heart of hearts... I just wanted Australia to win, you know, all the big moments and stuff, even though at the end of that series it was a little bit... it was a tough series. I think we've said that numerous times on the show. Well, I have anyway. But I think that people are... I think people are very confused, is what I'm trying to get to here, about how to feel about the Australian cricket team in South Africa. We want to win, but it's also like, oh, there's a lot of people you don't like.
Well, we don't make it easy for people to like us, do we? I mean, over the last several decades, we've been extremely unlikable across generations. I think I saw in the headlines this week, Brad Haddon came out midweek and said, you know, after all this had been unfolding, he said, you know, it's time to move on and play cricket, boys. As if, you know, now, you know, all this is unfolding. You know, this is the architect of the fucking mental disintegration program of the 2015 World Cup. And he's the one who can just come out and say, come on, lads, that's enough. Like, sledging just always needs to be on our terms. We are always going to be the ones that dictate it. It's fucking open slather. What goes on the field stays on the field. Don't get personal. But then when you do get personal, fuck off. Knock it off, lads. Come on. Like, why do we have a monopoly on sledging?
Well, I think that's a good point, Dave, and I wonder whether what Haddon's saying is actually part of a long-range program, which actually keeps the mental disintegration going. It's kind of like the NRA, you know, after a horrific lobbying. Mass murder. You actually understand the process and the program they go through in public relations to get things back to even keel. And maybe I'm not drawing too much of a correlation between sledging and the NRA, but...
are you saying that the NRA TV is like Cricket Australia's streaming platform?
They're your words, not mine. But perhaps Haddon saying, let's get back to cricket, boys, is just his way of kind of calming it down before building it back up again.
So CATV is holding this country to ransom. Is that what we're saying? No, we're not saying that. Let's get on to Vernon Philander's tweet where he claimed that he was hacked. And basically... I can't think of the tweet verbatim, but it was along the lines insinuating that Steve Smith, as you said earlier, Pez, took a dive, and it was actually him who should be, having to answer to the judiciary, instead of Kagiso Rabada, who obviously got those two games banned.
But, and he also included a link to the video. So along with the accusation, he presented the video. So you could see the video and also compare it with the statement that he made. And they didn't fucking add up, did they?
Well, it's funny because he said, because in apologising, which was in the morning in South Africa, he said, good morning, all my tweets. Waking up this morning to a lot of Twitter craziness as my account got hacked and someone posted a nice little article on my behalf. Sorry for all the drama and entertainment caused by the looks of it. Have a great day, all. And a friend of the show, Andrew Wu, actually, the reporter with Fairfax, he tweeted later, he's had a quick glance at Vernon Philander's Twitter feed. The alleged hacker did a decent job adapting to his tweeting style, noted his regular use of inverted commas to connect clauses, ellipses to connect clauses or dot, 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 general reluctance to use apostrophes and contractions, plus very occasional spelling error. I love the idea that there's a very sophisticated hacker or Russian bot just stirring a bit of drama between Australia and South Africa as well. You know, like someone going, like, oh, I've got to get into Philander's account here and just say, you know, look, in my view, it was Smith's fault.
What's with, like, hackers these days? Like, if I was a vigilante hacker, like, you can crack passwords, you can break into people's devices. I wouldn't be fucking spending my time on Vernon Philander. You know, I'd be bringing down corporate America, Mr. Robot style.
And just for the record as well, just with that stuff I said about CA and the NRA before, this podcast was hacked.
Isn't what's actually happened, like, Philander probably does have access to his account, but isn't it more likely that his manager does all his tweets? You know how, like, football players will do a tweet? I think there was a Premier League player recently, or maybe it was a Serie A player, but they basically had texted their agent saying, hey, can you say this on my Instagram post, and was like, good win for the boys today, etc., etc. But like his agent literally just like copied and pasted the text message. So it even said, can you use my thing? And, you know, So that's probably what's happened here, isn't it? Like, maybe his agent is either had a couple of beers, you know, he didn't change his, he's obviously got Vernon's account there. He's got his own account and he just hasn't quite, you know, he's tweeted from the wrong account, which is obviously something that we would be terrified of doing.
And have done on many occasions, you know, some of the more eagle-eyed viewers or listeners would have seen a couple of times when we've accidentally posted something incongruous, then taken it off 3 seconds later, taken a screenshot. We're not famous enough for a screenshot to go viral of it, but keep having a go at it.
Yeah, but isn't it funny, like, when you are broadcasting, for lack of a better term, to that many people, like, I think Vernon Philander has, like, something like 500,000 followers. Even us, you know, at a measly 70,000 or something. Like, a lot of people see it, and, like, you can be up there for 5 seconds, and then, like, a lot of people have seen that thing, and, like, once it's out there, it's out there. So, yeah, Vernon Philander, how many beers did he have before he tweeted as well, what I'm asking?
Well, multiple, I'd say, but, like
he spelled footage with 1-0.
Like, you have this scenario where somebody does a tweet and deletes it quickly, especially a high-profile person, like, and it'll be off in 5 seconds, but, like, there are all these people who have taken screenshots off it. Like, I just want to know who these people are, who just, like, as soon as you see something, you go, that's a mistake, bang, screenshot, that's for later. It's like,
I blame Snapchat, that's like, ruined everything.
Is this, Bill Burr's an American comedian I enjoy listening to, and I think he had someone on his show a couple of months ago talking about how, like, he's like, just note when anybody dies, any person of high profile dies, if you hear about it straight away, go onto Wikipedia. Someone will have already updated the Wikipedia page. He's like, who are these people? Like, who other people can just go straight away, bang, they're dead. Like, the first thing you hear, great, I'm going to go update the page.
Yeah. Please keep donating to Wikipedia, though.
Yeah.
Like, if I you know, died in a horrible accident, would you guys be able to change my MyCricket stats immediately?
Why don't we have a Wikipedia page yet? Fuck, what do we have to do?
Yeah.
What does the Great Cricket League have?
Like jobs. I think that's what it comes down to. I think the people who...
Is this us putting a call out there for our fans to write a Wikipedia page?
I'd say yes. More to the point, should we even bother defending Steve Smith's actions in that whole Rabada incident? I mean, Rabada said, like, Steve Smith should be the one to answer, not Kagiso. Like what he said was just blatantly wrong, and also it was just fucking weak. Okay, I don't think Flander did it, but, like, whoever has that account, it's just such a weak move, isn't it? Just, like, sledging someone on the internet mid-series. It's fucking weak.
Weak.
Thoughts?
Well, yeah, that's the worst thing. The worst thing you can be in cricket is weak.
Yeah, never be weak.
I don't know. I mean, just thinking about the incident with Rabada and Smith, it was kind of strange. Like, to my mind, he sort of, like, he barely touched him, sir. But, like, I saw the way Smith turned around, like, jolted as though he was, like wildly affronted at this. Led me to believe that, he was very aware, Smith, even despite being dismissed.
It wouldn't be a thing if Smith didn't react like that, I don't think. It was so minor. And the way that Smith... even though he was, like, reviewing a decision, but, like, was still able to, like...
The presence of mind.
Present this faux
He felt
shock.
Contact and he went to ground.
Exactly. He felt That's contact and went to ground. But he's like... I mean, I say he's like this, Smith. I don't mean that in, like, a cheating way or anything. Like, the guy is, like, so invested in the game. You know, if you remember that whole Mitch Marsh thing with scoring a ton at the SCG, like, Steve Smith is, like, the consummate... competitor. Like, you remember, like, being a teenager or a little bit younger and playing sport and being so invested emotionally and physically, your holistic health was invested in a game, your face would be red, nothing else mattered in the world. Smith, like, you kind of grow out of that as an adult as you gain this, you know, perspective and maturity. I'm not sure. Look, Smith's got perspective and maturity, please come on our show, Steve, same publisher and all that sort of stuff, but, like, he still maintains that teenage competitive rage, like, nothing else matters. And I suppose that's what you want from your Australian cricket captain, but, like, I'm not sure about the whole brushing thing.
As, like, a high performance coach, how do you maintain that teenage competitive angst throughout adulthood? Yeah. Like, if you get into your 30s, late 30s, children, family, how do you still care so much with so much else going on? How do you remain in that kind of focus? Serious question.
Like, don't talk to anybody else outside your bubble. Don't read. Don't consume anything other than, like, your own sport. Surround yourself with people who say you're awesome all the time.
I find it interesting I find it interesting, the whole Steve Smith thing about, because, like, he obviously, like, he felt the brush of the shoulder. He was aware that Rabada, you know, just one more incident away from copping a fine, copping a suspension. And like, that sort of visceral reaction where he just, like, you know, his shoulders, like, started doing his wiggly thing. Like, anytime that when you're in the field and Smith's batting and then it gets a bit narky and it gets a bit lippy on the field, and then he starts doing fucking weird stuff. Have you noticed that? Like, when it gets a bit chirpy, like, a bowler will say something to him and he'll, like, leave the next ball and he does, like, a fucking Roger Federer, like, serve, like, with his bat, and it's just weird. Like, he can't, like, when he gets fired up, it's like if a snake had shoulders. Like, he's just kind of, like, wiggling, like... and, like, it gets weird.
He's the absolute opposite of on the show. Steve Waugh. Like, Steve Waugh showed
he's
you
the opposite
nothing.
Of Steve Waugh.
He had so many fucking aggressive thoughts bubbling on in his head, Steve Waugh, I'm talking about. But he never showed it. You never saw he's the Iceman. But then you look at Steve Smith and every single emotion is visible on his body, like from his shoulders down to his feet, his fucking head. Everything is moving. Everything's constantly moving.
My big takeaway from that is I think Steve Waugh would be a very hard man to date. You know, you're trying to pick up on these, like, social cues. How's it going? Like, you would just never know with Steve Waugh, would you? You would never know.
Well, that's why,
like,
he married his high school sweetheart. You know, they just knew each other early and family friends.
Let's just linger that for a moment.
It would have been Steve Smith just, like playing poker. They talk about poker faces and stuff like that. Like, I don't actually know the rules of poker, but I imagine he'd slap his card down or turn it over or whatever the hell you do with poker the same way he leaves a ball. Like, you know, I'm bluffing. I don't know. Now I'm doing actions on the radio, which makes for good radio, doesn't it?
This all makes for great radio. Is anything else happening in the world of cricket? I mean, I guess, like, they're playing in Cape Town next.
Quickly, let's just nod to AB de Villiers, who is the best batsman of this generation, comfortably. He's Trent Woodhill tweeted about this. His record may not stack up against the guys who just churn out runs exclusively in their life, but he's the best batsman in all three forms. If you could pick anyone in the world, it'd be him.
Right now, you mean?
Now I think he's been doing it for a couple of years, really. Let's have this conversation. I'm not even talking about records are obviously important. I'm just talking about looking at the batsman and going, you are the best batsman. The way you do that, your best innings is better than anyone else in the world's best innings.
The ultimate compliment.
That's a it's always a tough one. It's like who's the best and everything, you know, cricket especially being binary, we must know who is the best person. Emphasis on the. I mean, there's some good players going around. Pez like Kohli, he'd have a shout. Steve Smith probably hasn't done it for long enough just yet. But he scores a little runs. But I know what you mean.
Sorry, Higgo. I was just going to say, cricket is entertainment, and as a consumer, you know, you're committing time and money to watching it, and who do you want to watch? Who do you want to spend your dollars on? And you've got to say, AB de Villiers is certainly up there. Is Steve Smith up there? Yeah. Do you want to watch a Steve Smith 100? It's fucking great. There's a lot of moments in it, but I'd probably prefer to watch AB just slice and dice.
I think it's entertainment and skill. On that note, actually, as we go to where yesterday Kevin Peterson announced his retirement, I urge you to... So a friend of the show, Vish, Vatushinahantharaja, who writes for The Guardian, writes for everyone, actually, tweeted his kind of tribute to KP, and he left a video up there of Peterson pulling Dale Steyn for four in the most, like... And I think it's David Lloyd might be commentating at the time, saying that is the most dismissive shot I've ever seen. So this is Steyn running in, probably bowling 145, you know, what, at 90 mile, you know, depending on where you're listening, and our analytics are increasingly showing that it's 90 miles an hour, because our UK audience... But the way he pulls Dale Steyn is one of the most, like, nonchalant things I've ever seen, and there's nothing we love more than great cricketer than nonchalance. Hats off to KP. Bit of a coat, but really good bat.
Lest we forget KP's career.
All right, Adam Collins coming up.
Boys, it's minus one here in London, and you know the best thing that private school boys can do when it's minus one in London and snowing is to peacock. And there's no better way to peacock in life than by wearing custom-made Budgie Smugglers. That's right, the Aussie brand, built in a backyard. See, we're getting better at this. Out of the backyard, now in London, now in the UK, but also in Australia, helping people peacock and be the best alpha version of themselves as possible. Hey guys, you like to peacock?
I like to peacock, mate. I like to peacock in many ways, but there's no better way. I don't know why the tone has to change. It's funny because I see like Budgie Smuggler, they're just all over Instagram, and the kind of people that I see wearing Budgie Smugglers, I keep saying the same word, but it's just alpha. Like, all these people are just alpha. I never see like a beta male in a pair of, like, you never see them. Like, it's all alphas. Like, it's so, nothing seemed more, you know, aligned to what we're doing than to pair with Budgie Smuggler, and somehow Pez has managed to integrate that into it's snowing and being minus one in London.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see if their Instagram feed changes after our sponsorship bit, because our audience is exclusively beta males. So if some of you folks out there with terrible, terrible rigs, worse than mine, can get in a set of Smugglers, and I'm calling them Smugglers from now on, and send them in. Send them in to us as well. We'll share them. We'll fucking share anything on this Twitter account that we've established. So love to see you in your Smugglers, boysies.
And... let's go wild. Let's make this interactive. We're allowed to swear in this ad. If you've got ideas for what the great cricketer custom Smugglers could be, let us know. Send it in to Budgie Smugglers.
What do they call this type of marketing when you kind of get the audience involved, like viral marketing? I can't remember. Anyway,
well, it's a bit gorilla-ish.
Are we influencers? Not sure. Anyway, Budgie Smuggler, budgiesmuggler.com.au. Get around it.
It has been referred to as the best sports writing tribute to a particular sport since Fever Pitch.
Does it do anything to enhance literature? Would be another question.
Another. I wouldn't even call it literature, really.
He's our friend. He's probably appeared on the show more than Ed Cowan. Does that make him the best friend of the show? Maybe. He's from everywhere. He knows cricket better than anybody. He's now commentating. You're going to know his voice more and more as life goes on. If you stay with us in this life, yeah, that's right. It's a Wild Loose show. It's Adam Collins. G'day, Collo.
That's the nicest intro yet. Chop suey, chop king. How are you?
Look at this. Just a couple of journos backslapping each other on air. Cole, I want to kick off with changing of the AFL songs. No, I'm kidding. Okay, let's talk about Kagiso Rabada, Colo. You're in Cape Town at the moment ahead of the third test. Yep. He's about to be rubbed out, I think, but there's some sort of appeal on the way. I want to talk about his bowling, though, mate. Can you actually run us through some cricket stuff? I mean, Brad Haddin instructed us to get back to the cricket because he's obviously the... He's the guardian of all things morality on the cricket field. Tell us about Rabada's bowling.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's right. I laughed when Brad said that. No, the Rabada spell that he bowled on what would have been afternoon three to Warner, it was as quick as you see in international cricket, accurate as well. It's rare that you see Warner beaten for pace. It's rare you see Warner beaten by anybody for that matter. And Rabada was able to achieve that and work him over. So that just gives you, it was a vignette which kind of reflected how well he bowled across the match. 11 wickets and would have taken many more. He had an 8-4 on the shelf at one stage in the second innings, but didn't capitalise. He'll regret that for the rest of his life. But he's next level. No matter how you define it, he's brilliant. And I kind of like the way he is fairly honest about his problem, if you like. I don't think it's that much of an issue, to be honest, but inside the rules as they currently are, the playing conditions as they currently are. He's fairly forthright about that. He explains that he does get overly emotional. He can't control it. I spoke to Michael Holding, massive name drop there. I spoke to Mikey Holding
That's
about
amazing.
This a couple of days ago, and he made the point that that he spoke to Rabada several times about this issue, and it's for some reason he can't rein it back in. So, as is the custom, they talk about it being a learning curve when these things occur, and hopefully he'll be a better bowler for it going forward. But it's a shame we won't see him, because the consensus across both press packs and both teams, I think, really is that this would have been brilliant. This could have been a truly perfect series had these guys gone all the way. Rabada duking it out with Australia. So that's a shame, but I'm sure we'll forget about it in a couple of days if Australia are winning.
Colo, just moving immediately away from the cricket now, because all we care about is a social dimension. What's he like as a bloke,
please,
Rabada? What's he like as a bloke? I'm trying to get into the bowels of the great cricket conversation about this. I mean, no one wants to talk about the cricket, even though my first question was exactly about that. What's he like as a bloke?
Yeah, well, look, all we can interpret it from is media conferences. We derive a lot of our assessments about what guys are like based on what they say to the media, which is, of course, a complete... It's ridiculous. I mean, having worked in politics for years, the way someone presents to the cameras versus the way they are behind closed doors is often the complete opposite. But nonetheless, he's very articulate. He's a very clever bloke, and he conducts himself beautifully. So as a consequence of that, we're all massive fans too. So he's doing nothing wrong there. They clearly love him. Like, you see the way they carry on when he takes a wicket. Sure, he's helping the side win, but there's a genuine affection there. So... I reckon he'd be a tremendous bloke to see. But great fashion as well. I saw him walking the streets of Durban one night with a pair of high tops. He had the jeans rolled up. He just got he looks just as you'd expect him to look on the circuit.
Baller.
That's red hot. Colo, tell us what does this mean for Mornay Morkel? Like, have we seen his last Test match?
Probably not, because he's in the squad still. They're going to Cape Town, where he broke Michael Clarke's shoulder 4 years ago. It's a track which traditionally has been given to pace and bounce. So, look, if he could be the likely inclusion, especially in light of the fact that Steyn didn't play last week in the first-class game that he was meant to play in to prove his fitness and all the rest of it. Faf du Plessis plays funny buggers in the way he communicates with the media. He said that Ngidi wouldn't play the day before the previous test. So you can't completely rule Steyn out of the equation with that in mind. But I think Morkel's the logical inclusion, which would be great as well, because, again, this is a guy that's been playing against Australia for 12 years, huge, massive storylines and all the rest of it running through it. So if you're going to replace Rabada with anyone, Steyn would be the ideal one for the narrative, if you like, but Morkel's not far behind.
Mate, tell us, we just had a conversation where Pez argued that Abe de Villiers is the best batsman of this current generation of players, and he made a fairly reasoned argument backed by Trent Woodhill. But, tell us what it was like to watch him score, that 100 and... What did he finish with?
126.
Anyway, his 100,
126. Yeah, he
right,
was...
Yeah, well, I mean, tell us about that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he was. It was just as you explained it. Really, he was in both Test matches so far. He's been able to look considerably, by a decent margin, the best player on the park. And it wasn't easy in Port Elizabeth. But there were some observations about the track being a fantastic Test wicket, and it was, because at no point during the Test match was it easy to bat, and at no point was it spinning around and getting cheap wickets either. So in those circumstances, the fact that he looked that much above anyone else is telling. If you mark them up against each other, Lyon versus Maharaj, the Quicks versus Rabada, etc., the logical reference point is Steve Smith. And so the fact that Smith struggled so far, I say struggled, I mean, he's still averaging 32. It's not as though he's been a walking wicket, but compared to the high standards that he sets, de Villiers is winning that contest. And it'll be, you know, interesting to see whether any of the Australian batsmen can turn the corner. Khawaja made 75 in the second dig at PE, but could have got out 15 times, and I don't think he would say anything other than that. He scrapped really hard and was beaten routinely. He's changed his game to the way he plays spin. He's taking more chances. He's backing himself, so that's good. That's encouraging. But nonetheless, I don't imagine it's going to be, based on the form lines we're seeing at the moment, Khawaja. So it's back to the old duo of Smith and Warnock, and one of them take the series down. And the last time that neither of those two had a massive series for Australia, you go back 18 months, and it's that series against South Africa at home where they got thrashed in Perth and Hobart. So that's not a bad form line there either.
It's funny, isn't it, Colo? Like, while Australia have been one of the better modern cricket teams, I say we just because I have a birth certificate from Australia, but we have a tendency to be to actually be the team that really gets hammered by top quality batsmen. I think about Lara and Tendulkar. They sort of reserve their greatest innings, their legacy innings in many ways, for Australia, and rightly so, because we're coats. But I was curious to see Mitchell Starc's comments during the weeks, you know, sort of claiming he was a little bit disappointed to have been instructed by Steve Smith to sort of bowl wide down leg side to stop AB de Villiers scoring runs and stuff like that. I mean, we sort of find ourselves in these situations sometimes. So what do you make of that? I mean, are they starting to build up AB de Villiers in their heads as a guy that is kind of superhuman?
Well, you don't see Mitchell Starc, and it was Pat Cummins at the other end, if memory serves me correctly, instructed to bowl down the leg side, and I've never seen those two blokes be asked to do that in the baggy green before, so that was quite interesting. The fact that Smith was willing to not just use the sort of in-out milking umbrella field, but every man was on the fence at a couple of times there when de Villiers was batting. They have immense respect for the guy. I enjoyed that bit from Starc. Usually, you'd expect most bowlers to play the straight bat and say they bowled down the leg side in error or whatever, but he threw Smith straight under the bus. It was beautiful to watch. Everything you said is right about de Villiers, and the way he's played against, his first Test match against Australia was in December 2005 when Brad Hodge made his double ton. To give you some sense of the longevity of the guy, he's been playing, this is his eighth series against Australia, so, and he's never had as we know, never won on home soil. So again, it sort of underpins why this means so much to him. I love that stuff. It sort of means an awful lot more when you know the personality involved. The fact that he missed nearly 2 years of Test cricket, he didn't play between January 2016 and Boxing Day 2017. Most people didn't expect him to play Test cricket again. And now the conversation's changed to, can he play for 5 more years? He's looking that good. He hasn't really struggled that much from injury. It's been more, you know, a balancing that kept him out of Test cricket with other forms of the game. A couple of injuries, but nothing that's been hugely major. So maybe it's the case that we're seeing that the rebirth of him, and he can bat on for another 4 years, and that'd just be wonderful, because I love it when blokes play into their late 30s and still are able to succeed against blokes half their age.
Colo, I just want to ask you about the wickets. I mean, a lot of people have, you know, said that the reason Australia have done so well in South Africa over the past is because it's the most like Australia, and that is certainly true in terms of, you know, pace and carry in the wickets. But the way that Australian wickets have gone in the last sort of few summers, and the way the South African wickets have been in this South African summer, with obviously the seeming wickets against India and the seeming wickets in the first two Test matches here. Do you reckon that's sort of almost as like tilts the ledger towards South Africa more, because Australian batters, like we love them in Australia on like these drop in pitches, but the only time it's done a bit, in Adelaide with the pink ball, recently, Australia struggled. So the wickets, whilst I think they're very entertaining to watch, where like, you know, bowlers actually have a chance to take wickets. Do you reckon these wickets sort of tilt the ledger a little bit in South Africa's favour?
Yeah, I think that maybe initially I thought the South Africans had missed a trick by not playing green seamers with the ball moving around, but it would appear as though on the available evidence that Rabada is able to get the ball moving, the whole dynamic changes with him out of the 11. So I think that we can almost start again in the way we assess the two batting lineups, because he has been the defining bowler so far in this series. I wouldn't doubt that Maharaj can make a contribution as well as he did in the first test. You've got to remember that it is the middle of March now, which means that much as it is in the Australian season, the squares are very tired. You look at the square at Port Elizabeth, there was 9 tracks on them and they'd all been used heavily. So that helps in terms of reverse swing. Reverse swing is the calling card of Mitchell Starc. So I'm not sort of too, I don't really have a strong view either way, but I think that you do need to consider the fact that Rabada not being there does change everything.
Colo, it's just an absolute masterclass from you, as it's always. Good. You can catch Adam Collins commentating for SEN. He writes for The Guardian, Crick Info, whatever you want, really. And he also has a wonderful podcast full of this analysis and humour with Jeff Lemon. It's called The Final Word. We don't mind plugging it. It's very good. Colo's been great to us as well.
Well, thanks, Sam. We've got Jared Waitley on the pod this week. He spoke to us for an hour and a half a couple of days ago before he flew home. It was a brilliant interview, so tune in for that. And my girlfriend's sitting here watching me wondering what's going on. Yesterday, she gave me a massive spray when we were at the wineries in Stellenbosch when there was a mural on the wall that had every word with king after it. So like sea king, you know, walking, etc. And my first comment to her was, my natural reflexive action was to go, like, give her a nudge and go, chop king. And she goes, it's always the same with you, isn't it? Always about chopping. I suppose it is. You see her shaking your head right now, and I'm going to get another spray when I'm off the phone, I'm sure.
So what I'm hearing is that Colo actually guests onto his show as opposed to us this week. And he has a good relationship and makes chop king jokes. So we'll delete this last bit because it's making us look pretty bad. Colo, thanks for joining us this week.
On you, fellas. Talk to you soon.
This summer, we've got the biggest renovation challenge yet. 2 teams will have to transform not one, but 2 broken down grade cricket dressing rooms every single week. There will be tension.
What even is grade cricket, Dazza? Why did we take time off work to do this?
Come on, Charlesy. Work hard, love.
There will be drama.
I just want to make this perfect. Grade cricket deserves a great home.
But when the reveal comes, there will be joy.
Oh, God. Lads, boys, look at this, eh? Results.
Ever since the missus booted me out and took the kids, I've been sleeping in this dressing room. It's a second home to me, literally. So this is really special.
For us to be able to come in and give these grade cricketers a beautiful new dressing room, one they can drink their beers in, sing the club song, judge each other in the showers. Yeah, you know, it makes you feel good.
But this ain't no charity. Not when the stakes are this high.
I'm not here for a bloody holiday. I mean, if I wanted that, I would have gone to Bali or Thailand.
It's Australia's toughest renovation competition. Winner takes all.
If I have to dish out a little bit of chin music, I will.
Presented by Australia's favourite knockabout blue-collared larrikin millionaire.
We're giving great cricket the reno makeover it deserves.
Reno Rampage, coming soon.
Lads, that time of the week again, hashtag RCGC. Obviously, with no guest this week, and I feel like we have to keep apologising, no guest, even though it's like, you know, us getting a guest where we don't pay them any money and to have them on our show to talk to famous people is a gift that we keep giving to listeners. But when we don't provide that gift, we have to apologise to the listeners. Why?
Yeah, just back off, listeners.
The way I was raised is just to apologise in advance for everything.
All right, so what I thought we'd do this week is add a couple more hashtag RCGCs, and I've got to say, this week, like, the questions are strong. The questions are strong this week. I've got 6 here, some of them varying in length. I know in the past we've joked about how people tend to use this as like a short story contest, just a desperate cry from help for people who follow us. But some of these are actually pretty funny, but the last one, it goes on for about a week and a half, so settle in. Anyway, so the first one comes in from Adrian Chad, and he said, "Dear TGC, just wondering if the triple C can be completed in a different order. Last season, I swiped correctly on a Friday night to get the first C, then followed it with a ton, and the big night with the boys on the circuit. Does this count as the elusive triple C? I feel the different order was harder to achieve as I could not use my 100 as a conversation starter with a woman. Thanks for your help with the clarification. Keep up the good work. Love the podcast. Piers, I play district cricket, not park cricket, just for clarification. I don't know why that's important at all. So for some of the newer listeners, Eddos, I'll throw this one to you straight away. Explain what the triple C is, the elusive triple C.
Well, here goes. The triple C is the Circuit Century Chop Trilogy. Completed in order, it means to score a century in a game of cricket, go out on a big circuit with the boys, and then get a chop, which is a euphemism for sex with a woman or a man, depending on your persuasion. Completed in order, it is the triple C, and it is the holy trinity of cricket.
Okay, so Adrian has asked here. Was it Adrian? Yeah, Adrian's asked here. He met a woman on the Friday, and then he just what a weekend for a start. It sounds like he's just absolutely killing it there. But so does this count as a triple C?
No, he goes, it doesn't, because it does need to be done in order. I, for one, don't understand how you can chop before a game due to the crippling anxiety that most people would have heading into a game.
But what about, professional athletes who, you remember, there was always, you can't have sex before a game, like Ronaldo in the World Cup, maybe it was, 98 or whatever, and he famously gave up sex and then played terribly. Obviously, it's not... you don't give up sex as a great cricketer because you're obviously... Well, you struggle to get it at the best of times, let alone on a Friday night before cricket.
It's not a choice.
But, yeah, I mean, thoughts on the order? I agree with Pez. I don't think it can be completed, especially across states. It's like getting a hat trick across innings. It's just the same kind of thing. It doesn't count.
Well, yeah, it's dirty. Yeah.
What I would have accepted was the quadruple C, chop, century, circuit, chop. I just think that the chop needs to occur after the century and the circuit. It's in many ways the hardest thing to procure. Procure is definitely the wrong word. And if you do procure it, then it doesn't count. Sorry, babe, if you're listening. That's all right. I'm just on a podcast. Words don't matter. I think the order is really helpful. I mean, it's really important. I remember sitting around in stretching circles, and again, for early listeners to the show or new listeners to the show, stretching circle is where all the impossible sex stories are told, and you literally divide teams for warm-up games based on who had sex the night before and who didn't. Many people have partners. It's not an abnormal thing, I think, to have sex before a game, but to score 100 and to top it off with a circuit and, as they say, a chop, is what the elusive triple C is all about. So no, Adrian, denied.
It sounds like you had the weekend of your life and treasure it and never let it go. And, always remember back to this moment in time when three blokes from the internet spoke about your question. But it is elusive for a reason, that it's extremely hard to, as Pez rightly put in my book, procure. The elusive. The elusiveness is the hardest bit.
It's easy to procure.
I say to you, sir, well played. A wonderful weekend. Doesn't count. All right. Shane Herbst writes in, who I'm pretty sure is the fourth grade cricketer, because he writes in basically every other week. Wasn't his question last week, should I focus on my degree more than hashtag AskTJC questions? But he has slid into the DMs again straight away. But, to be fair, he does write a good question. Anyway, he says, if you could choose one of the following, which would it be? A rig for life, being good at cricket, your dad's approval and affection includes hugs, the demise of China and Russia as global powers, or the triple C, but you got the century in fours and the chop was a 3 out of 10. God.
Grim. Which side of this conversation are we on?
Women's Week as well.
Yeah. Which side of this? Okay. I would. A really hard question. He goes, it's a really difficult one. The one that I'm mulling over a lot is your dad's approval and affection, brackets includes hugs, close brackets.
It's not an unspoken approval or affection. It's spoken, and it includes physical contact, which we all crave.
I'm going to rule out the triple C straight away because I just want to firmly and out of fear put myself on the side of not kind of discussing chops being 3 out of 10, despite having just said those words. The demise of China and Russia as global powers is not something that, that would kind of indicate I'm some US nationalist or whatnot. I mean, I firmly believe Australia needs to actually build and embolden its ties with China in the Asian century. So, no, I'm not going to say that I want them to fall apart. In fact, that will create more global instability, I would say. So it comes down to a rig for life or being good at cricket. So I'm going to say a rig for life, because if you have a rig for life, firstly, you're more likely to get a triple C. Secondly, you're more likely to be good at cricket because you've got a good rig and you're going to go up the grades anyway, even if you're not good at cricket. And thirdly, your dad will probably approve of you more. Maybe not. That could go either way. So I guess I'm risking my dad's approval and affection, includes hugs. But I get plenty of other hugs from people because I've got a good rig.
That's I can't add to that. A rig for life just gives you so many other opportunities, including pretty much all the below. So, rig for life.
Pez, you've nailed it. Yeah, the rig actually gives you all of these things. Also, like being good at cricket, like that's like the real question is like what's good at cricket? Because like you know, like all three of us were good at cricket, but like we didn't play any test matches. We played zero test. How many fucking test matches did you play?
The barometer for having an opinion.
I've just got an insight into how Higo's brain works.
I just never got over when Jeremy Paul said to me on television, you know, what level did you play? Which is just like the level of like how cliche that is, like the professional athlete.
How many times did you come off the bench and play four fucking minutes in a Wallabies match?
Yeah. Lucky they asked Higo's on
the show. You just got to hit back on Alpha with Alpha, even if it's misplaced and you don't actually believe in it. You just got to always double down on everything. Trump told me that.
All right. I think the answer is an obvious one, and it's rig for life. All right. Andrew Goldsborough says, using the hashtag AskTGC, dear TGC, I feel compelled to write in for advice following recent events in my cricketing career. After starting a new job and a new cricket club last summer in Newcastle, the English one, not the Australia one, sorry boys, I've been forever chatting with a colleague about our love for the game. England's shitty Ashes series, Australia's relentless sledging, and anything else cricket. It's all we talk about. I've known for a while that my colleague's son is a keen cricketer and actually plays county. For the last couple of months, he has been pitching the idea of netting with his son. This filled me with dread, as a prospect of being rinsed by a 13-year-old kid in the nets would surely force my retirement, regardless of the fact that I'm only 23. Eventually, I gave in, and his son came along to my club's winter nets on Monday. Fuck me, he's good. After a couple of balls swung in at pace to the batsman's feet, he was immediately whisked into the good net. When I was batting, he managed to hit me on the pads twice, definitely going down. But other than that, I survived. He snicked my first ball behind and was respectful to the rest of my bowling, so I could not return to work the next day with at least some pride intact. However, my colleague is convinced we should do this more often, and this leads me to my question. Should I continue to play with this kid? I mean, it undoubtedly makes me more focused at the crease and more determined when I'm bowling. I'm certain it would develop my game, but, and it's a big but, I don't think I can take being alphaed by someone of his age and continue to play. He's going to overtake me ability-wise sooner or later, and I don't know when that will be. Please help me, TGC. You're my only hope. P.S. Any advice on how to hit the ball harder, bowl 140s, and just generally look like Mitch Marsh would be greatly appreciated. Cheers, Andrew. So Andrew's is that he's being alphaed by a 13-year-old kid because he's better at cricket than him.
Yeah. Well, firstly, no advice on, like, why does he think we would know how to hit the ball harder, bowl 140s? We'll literally do a podcast on the internet. Like, if we knew how to do that, we wouldn't be here. But no, okay, Andrew, it's all about the relationship with you and your colleague. Why does he want his son to come and play cricket with you? The paranoid man, and you're right to be paranoid, who lives in the alpha prism, would presume that that colleague's son coming along would is an effort to really undermine you and your skills. You probably talk about how much you like cricket and all that sort of stuff, and he's probably saying, my son's 13, he's of my flesh and blood, and he's better than you already. That's the alpha prism. Or he could just be a person who earnestly wants his son to play with, like, you know, nice men, and you seem to be a nice enough bloke. And to learn that way as a 13-year-old who's rising through the ranks, you know, can he be surrounded by people who are going to be good influences on him? I'm going to say go with the former. It's definitely an alpha play. And if that's the case, no, you shouldn't be playing against this kid anymore. He's probably better than you. And I say hide in your cocoon and only play against people your own ability level, so that you can always feel like you're good. Never ever expose yourself to other ideas. Never ever expose yourself to more intelligence or superiority. It's not going to be good for your health. Hide as much as you can.
I think Homer Simpson said that. That sounds pretty much like, don't try, because you can only... Well, you'll always fail. Look, I think he's going to fail if he keeps netting with this 13-year-old who's clearly on the rise. He's only 23, this guy. He seems extremely insecure for a 23-year-old. worried about, you know, a young, up-and-coming 13-year-old. It just seems weird. Like, this guy, he's a kid himself, and he's worried about another kid coming through and you know, and making him question his own mortality and alphadom. I don't know how TGC... can help him. I think, as Pez said, just stay away from anyone who threatens you.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Well, I'll take on his last part of the question where he says, how do I look like Mitch Marsh? Obviously, you need to take the pill that was offered in the previous question asked by Shane. In a rig for life is just, I think it's just a pill-based situation. But, yeah, split program, you know, protein intake, carbohydrate.
What is a split program? Like, we talk about, like, split sets and stuff. He goes, what's a split set? Is that... like you split through the day, or how does... I say it a lot, but I don't actually know what it means.
Well, the actual split, like the training split, and the actual, like a split program is like, you know, you're doing like body... Bez, you're just like a fan. Like you're just watching Dave and I talk now, just like, this is great.
Tell me.
The split program... the split program is just like, you know, so for instance, you might do like, you know, chest and back on a Monday, and then you might do like legs on a Tuesday, then maybe you do shoulders Wednesday, then you know, I'm actually just literally, describing
chill on Sunday.
My own routine, but yeah, obviously that's a lie because I do arms every single day of the week. So how do you get a good rig? I don't have a funny answer to that.
Well, and we're now sponsored by muscleandstrength.com.
Yeah, let's get bodybuilding.com on board. Then we become Instagram followers. All right, Lee Couchman said, question for the next podcast, and I found this one interesting, lads. I'll throw this one to you, Dave, as an expert in urinal dynamics. How should one respond to urinal alphaing, i.e. the person arriving before you picks the middle urinal of the three or the middle of the trough, forcing you into being a urinal wingman next to them or to exit?
To exit, just hold it. Yeah, don't urinate even though you desperately need to. Look, you have to do it with confidence, don't you? You have to do it with confidence. You have to stand there confidently, get up, fucking pull the fly down, and just with authority pull your member out and make sure you've got a really strong stream. I think if you're the biggest concern, I think you would have if you're going to urinate next to someone, you just got to really be prepared to urinate with conviction. Like, if you go there and you get a stage fright and you take too long, then you're in all sorts of trouble. You're in absolutely all sorts of trouble.
How do you urinate with conviction? What, like, you push harder or something?
Conviction, maybe some deep sighs, maybe the banter, maybe a bit of chat. Anything to take away the, you know, the obvious apparent fact that you are frightened of urinating next to another man.
Can I say, he goes, actually, this is it's a very interesting question because I've never thought about urinal alphaing, but like it is its own game. It's a game of its own. Like you can walk into the urinals at work, for example, and someone could be like a really senior executive. I'm not talking about my current employment. Again, hello anyone from work listening. There's probably zero of you, but I've worked into plenty of offices before where someone more senior than you has already started at the trough and you come in next to them. And like there's a lot of things I've not been blessed by, but one thing I have been blessed by is being able to urinate fairly well for now. And so I'm really confident when I get there. There's a lot of people who aren't. And, like, you can just, in that sort of 5 to 10 seconds of complete silentness and awkwardness, have walked away with, I don't know how you quantified in alpha points, but, like, so much more alpha credibility because they've sat there going, oh, my God, this junior person is urinating far better than me. So, really, who does have the better life?
And I like the idea that you sort of touched on and that, like, you have to have, like, a strong stream. So, like, the...
the inference there is that, you know, someone next to you has like a weak stream, and then you either think like, well, this guy's got a, you know, a tiny dick, because you know, a strong stream says
no,
like, well,
correlation between the stream and the size of penis.
Well, there's a correlation like with the, like, the amount coming out though, right? Like and like how, like,
and how hard it hits the porcelain. It's all about the impact, like how fucking hard you get it. Like, did he get it?
Yeah.
Didn't even get it. Yeah, it's just like, but, you know, sometimes I'll go into, you know, into the stalls, and I'll deliberately urinate onto the water, therefore making it sound like, you know, it's like the louder noise you can make, you know, the inference that even though there is no direct correlation, is just like, fuck, this bloke's just, he's putting a hose out in there.
Fuck, this bloke's got a piece.
Yeah. It's a fire hydrant.
Peace.
But isn't the biggest thing here, like, the bloke who's come into Lee's urinal, and if there's three urinals and the bloke's gone in the middle, that in itself is a really bold alpha move, because that's just like, that's basically just like, it's you know, well, a pissing contest seems too cliche, but or ironic, but like, that's just a bad social cue to walk into a urinal and just go into the middle, or go into the middle of three. Do you reckon we've given this too much time? Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Probably.
Yeah.
Tom Hartney says, hashtag RCDSC, some advice please, lads. This year I've been charged with the enviable task of planning the end of year cricket trip away. In between sorting out the circuits and finding locations where the boys might have a good optic and are likely to burgle a chop, I need to sort out room allocations. We have the usual blend of suspects attending, a mixture of first to fourth graders, including the club chop king and a few heirs to the throne. A few players with wives and girlfriends, for which this trip will be the highlight of the year. Plenty of social capital attending, however. Also, a couple of rare units in our midst. How do I go about sorting out the mixture of blokes into rooms that will satisfy everyone's needs? Do I draw it out randomly, or do I employ some sort of grey cricket feudal system? Or should I just look after myself and put myself in a room with the social capital, with all the social capital, and say that the hotel did it? Any advice would be greatly appreciated, as this trip could also give my own social capital in the club a much needed boost. Excellent question, Tom. So he wants to know who to pair in what room in his end of season trip.
I would advise that you do everything you can to maximise your own social capital. Grey cricket is a feudal system, and I'm concerned that you have put your name to this question. If I played at a club and I heard someone ask a question like this and their name was next to it, they'd lose a lot of social capital. But presuming that this isn't heard by anybody else, or you've just faked the name, which is intelligent, I would definitely not be doing it randomly. I would definitely be employing whatever arbitrary social dynamics you think are appropriate. I think chop kings need to go with chop kings, and I think that, like, if you are not one of those things and you aspire to be one, you need to be put in the sort of middle pack or lower pack with the lepers, and you need to work your way up, and that's the way that you increase your capital. I remember going on a end of season trip at a club that I won't name, where one player literally wrote out odds of who would get the most sex. I was going to say procure the most sex, so that would be a different thing, but who's going to get the most sex. And he wrote one of the most thorough books of odds of each player, and then a little blurb under it about why he thought they might do it or might not. Oh, I was not short odds.
Yeah. That is just like, what a snapshot of grade cricket in a nutshell, and the gambling, inherent gambling vices that pervade each and every club in grade cricket.
Edos, let me ask you something that I picked up on Pez's notion there, that he thought that the chop kings should be roomed together. Now, like, in terms of, you know, competition for places, and I'm literally talking about, you know, I mean, I don't know if this is like a king single room, you know, a twin double, you know, I don't know what the situation of this hotel is, but like two chop kings in the same room is basically like having two silverback gorillas in the same, you know, cage. Yeah. You know, is Pez right to suggest that is actually a good thing?
Oh, well, I mean, I think every club has one premier chop king. So you'd be pairing a chop king with an heir apparent chop king. So there probably wouldn't be as much friction. It'd almost take the heir apparent under his wing and guide him. And inevitably, group sex would be involved, which is concerning for all. And let's not even go there. But I think... let's move on, he goes.
All right. The last question. The last question of this week's hashtag AskTGC. And this one is a bit of a long one, but it comes from Connor Hughes. And, Pez, I noticed that you replied back to this one and you said it was good. I'll be honest, I haven't actually read it yet. So,
it's long.
It was good. So,
Jesus.
Do you want me to read it?
Yeah, mate, you can read it.
Okay, this is good. It's hard to get through. This is from Connor Hughes. Gents, long-time listener, big fan of the books. Apologies for the massive clusterfuck of a question coming up, but there is a lot going on. Me and a few of my mates play Wednesday night Division 3 cricket at a sports centre in Perth for a team aptly named the Glue Factory. Not sure your thoughts on indoor cricket, but I presume you don't hate it enough to completely ignore this question while admitting it is a weird inferior game. Anywho, a few of us are seasoned cricketers, while two of our mates had never played the great game of cricket before, and as such, weird Phil Jakes... wheeled Phil Jakes' S grips and amble in off two steps and bowl loopy slow shit deliveries, which in indoor cricket sit up and get hit for maximums. Maximums full stop. Last Wednesday we played a team called War and Piss. That's W-A-U-G-H and Piss. They all wore custom team kits, which indicates they have been playing for a long time. First over of the game, their weird-looking 40-year-old opener yells at our first bowler to hurry the fuck up and to stop fucking around, which was odd considering we'd been playing for all of a minute at this point. I informed him if he was going to be so serious, he shouldn't play in what is genuinely the lowest standard of indoor cricket in the state, as far as I'm aware. He replied that they would show us we are a division better than you pricks, and thus began the battle. The points of interest came in our chase of their run-of-the-mill score of 130. Three of their six bowlers ran into the crease and full-on pegged the ball. No word of a lie, their elbows must have been at almost 90-degree angles. All of this after our two beginners ambled in and bowled loopy pies that were, as far as we were concerned, within the laws and spirit of the game, if the latter concept even exists. The issue with the throwing was that it became apparent that the umpires are instructed to not clamp down on suspect actions. Murali would be most welcome to trundle in at this sports centre. I presume this is because in the lowest division, there are many players learning the game and the centre probably doesn't want to put off potential clients. Are you still with me, boys?
Yeah, keep going, mate.
No, it's keep going.
Okay.
It's descriptive.
He's got problems with throwing a ball. Oddly enough, however, all the other laws of the game were followed stringently. For example, one of the literal baseball pitchers at one point ambled in, threw the ball at my chest, which it hit, and yet this was deemed a legal delivery as it was, inverted commas, below the head. While we were getting pinged for minor front foot no balls, War and Piss could merrily ditch the ball free from scrutiny. We were penalised for wides marginally down the leg side, while these miscreants were allowed to throw the ball willy-nilly with no penalty. As a result, we lost by about 30 runs. To make matters worse, with two balls left in the chase and with no mathematical possibility of us winning the game, the cunt opening batsman unsuccessfully attempts a man-cad. To state that this team is a division or two superior and then blatantly cheat made me sick. I weakly didn't look him in the eye during the post-game handshakes. There is obviously a lot going on here. What should me and my indoor team do? Do we come across as that word again and request that the indoor centre penalise people with beyond suspect actions? Do we abuse the umpire when we walk past him in the car park next week? Given Warren Piss has custom kits and seem to have been around for a while, do we approach the centre to have their competition points invalidated and their Division 3 licence revoked? And when our pie throwers are getting pounded, do I tell them to just start throwing the ball or do I try and uphold some level of integrity? Most importantly, in an 8-team comp, we will inevitably play Warren Piss again. Again, is it reasonable to instruct my team to throw the ball as hard as possible for six overs at the cunt opening batsman? I've done it again before reverting to legitimate actions for the rest of the game. Cheers, Connor.
Oh, my God. I don't think we've had a question that has contained so many questions within it. And I just picture him, like, he just obviously is in a state of inertia. Like, what do I do? I've got to wait till the podcast comes out to find out. Yeah. I literally have no idea how to handle this situation.
Yeah.
I think, just to quickly on the throwing thing, I think that's just, and I hate, sorry to channel my inner Mark Latham, but this fucking PC gone mad massively. Like, that umpires can't call a bloke for no ball, but for chucking a ball is just, something's gone wrong there with society.
Yeah.
I think we're worried about offending kids with suspect actions and, you know, anyone with a suspect action might, you know, turn away from the game of cricket and be lost. And obviously revenues lost to the indoor centre as well is important. But I think, fuck me, cricket, just don't chuck it. Just don't fucking chuck it. That's one question. How many more we got?
No, I think that's the main thing. Like, not chucking it is literally the first thing you learn when you're trying to teach someone how to bowl in cricket. Like, not doing that is the first thing you have to do. It is the fundamental prerequisite of what makes a what makes the game cricket. I find it baffling and also supremely amusing that there was a game going on where people were just running in and full on pegging the ball at people's chests. He must be exaggerating here, Connor. But if he's not, that's hilarious.
I also just think it's amazing that, you know, and he mentions Murali there, and maybe the infrastructure is a little different in Sri Lanka, but how you can get to the test arena and have a suspect action just... You go through so many fucking grades from, like, club to actual grade cricket, state, and there must be so many people telling you, or, you know, under the breath, suspicious and fucking murmurs going around. Yeah. And something, you know, there is the infrastructure there to correct your action. How the fuck does anyone get to the test arena and get no ball for chucking is beyond me. I know that's off topic.
We've actually answered one of, like, one of the questions that Connor didn't ask. Can I just touch on, like, the what's going on here with indoor cricket? Like, first of all, there's a team called War and Piss, which is, like, pff, I mean, there's a lot going on there for a start.
Those blokes have never read a book.
Much like all the people who have bought our two books. And then they've said to the other team, we're a division or two higher than you, which is just a really weird thing to brag about. Then they've got people who are throwing it, and they're like, okay, I played a few games of indoor cricket about 10 years ago, and I played in this one game against, like, some young blokes, and I was batting, and like the last ball, I needed something like 2 runs or something, and I got out. And so it was obviously a close game, but it was like a, you know, little Tuesday night, little friendly competition. And then the handshakes, one bloke shook my hand. He said, suck shit. That was like... He shook my hand and he said, suck shit. And I was like, it was jarring. I was jolted. And I just like,
yeah,
I don't know how to cop it. So I think there's like indoor cricket. These guys have fucking matching kits. These blokes aren't good people. And so, like, I mean, really, I think it's okay to lose with, like, some form of dignity to eventually, in, you know, roundabout way, answer Connor's question. It's just like, if you, obviously you want to beat them in any means possible, but I mean, is that going to, you know, change the way you live your life? Probably not. So
you've got to talk to all the other teams in your competition and inevitably ostracize them from the competition, then they get kicked out or just turn everyone against them.
Sorry, Dave. I'm going the other way. I think if there's a competition that's legislating for full-on pegging the ball at people's chests and you're allowed to do it, I'm turning up. Like, it's a rare opportunity.
This is a different sport. It's indoor cricket for a start, which, you know, has merit by its own means, can be entertaining, fun to play. But this is like people having one day kits, but then probably wearing whites at the bottom of it as well, so it looks yuck. And then, like, people are this is a different sport. This is not cricket. This isn't cricket. This is like a mixture of fucking t-ball and, like, rounders or some shit. So, I don't know what my point is, but yeah. Connor, we haven't answered any of your questions.
Indoor cricket's yuck.
Thank you very much for your just the base level, that's the answer. Alpha at all costs, especially in a urinal. Thank you so much for all the people who did write into questions. They were like, for some reason this week there was so many that I only got around to about half of them. But so if you have written in, thank you very much, and we probably will get around to it eventually. But you know, if you want us to answer your question poorly, hashtag AskTGC. Thank you, Sam Perry. Thank you, Dave Edwards, for joining me, as you do every week, and we try and make these issues. The third test match coming up in a moment's time. We'll be back again next week to do it all again, hopefully with a guest.